Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Focus on Albany. My guest today is Reverend Valerie Foss. And Valerie, I've known her even a little bit before she ran for mayor of Albany in 2013, right, Val?
Yes.
So there's been a number of unfortunate incidents that have happened, you know, within the past year. There's the terrible Donald Ivey case, and there's problems now with the school board and the, you know, the superintendent. And, you know, I've tried to get a number of people to come on the show to talk about, you know, studying the dialogue between, you know, the Black community and the white community, and to kind of come to an understanding, hopefully, and maybe make things a little better. But I haven't had, you know, much of a response. So, you know, when we talked the other day, you said that you would be, you know, willing to share your views. So, you know, do you want to start with Donald Ivey? Do you want to start with the school board, however you want to start it? What's your views? What's your feelings about everything that's happening in the city of Albany?
Well, it's quite a mess. It's been that way for a long time. When we talk about the school board, that is active in trying to get the school board to make a decision to keep Dr. B. Myself, along with other clergy and the important people, I wouldn't say the important people because all people are important, but the people of position came together, Black and white, to try to get them to see reason and keep her for a little while because of the condition of the Board of Ed in this city. I guess a lot of people don't want to speak on it because you can't speak the truth without stepping on toes. But, you know, I'm about truth, and because I'm not any beholding to any particular court, I just speak what is truth, what I see and how I call it. So, yeah, it was pretty bad with the Albany School Board that they did not listen to reason. They were more on what they set their mind to do. And they seem like they didn't consider our children and the horrible condition our Board of Ed is in and our track record and the history of our Board of Ed. And they just did what they wanted to do and got rid of an effective leader in the middle of a bad time, you know. And so that was pretty bad. And I think what hurt a lot of us and that meeting, the last meeting that we had at the board, it was so heated and with such anger and indignation was because they just said later for the community. It seemed like they said, we don't care what the minister say. We don't care what two of the current board members says. We don't care what the members of the Common Council says. We don't care what parents say. We don't care what anybody says. We want her gone, and she's going to be gone, and we don't have to answer to anyone. And that was very disrespectful, and so that caused a lot of upset at the last board meeting. Now, Cynthia, if you the racism part of it, you know, I don't think it's a thin line between Black and white, Blacks against white, because you have Blacks and white on both sides, for her and against her. You know, you have Blacks and white on the same side agreeing, as you have Blacks and white on the other side disagreeing. So it wasn't, I don't know, in that sense you could say, clearly say it was a racist thing, because it was mixed opinions and mixed races on both sides. But in my, I put a comment on Facebook, and I called it the lynching at the Albany Board of Ed. And the reason I use such a strong title was because that's what it appeared to me. It seemed like we were begging for the life of a person who deserved to be listened to, who deserved to have another chance, who deserved to be given the respect that they needed to, and we protested, and we came out for months, even a little over a year, and the people with the power said, no, hang her, hang her, hang her. And they hung her. They hung her out dry. They made a decision in a back room before the next meeting. They roped her. And I looked at it that way. So that was my personal opinion, the lynching at the Albany Board of Ed. And so now it's business as usual. It appears they have a new person in there, and they're going on with business. Dr. D, who is going on with her life as well and will do well. And so that's where we are now, and I just hope that they can pull it together and do what is right by these children and by this city and the parents and the taxpayers as well.
Now, I had gone to the school board meeting the day that Dr. V was let go, and, you know, people came up to speak, and 90% of them had come up and they thought it was a racial injustice that had just happened. You know, so I'm looking at it from the perspective of the people that I saw and the people that I heard. And they had made it out to be, you know, a black-white issue.
Well, you can get a black-white issue out of it. Because when Dr. V, if you had ever read some of her commentary on the board's website, she talked about disparities. She talked about how black and brown children were getting the short end of the stick. She talked about how there has to be a change in this system. So she brought up issues of race, and she brought up issues of segregation, and she brought up issues that are not popular to a lot of people. People are not wanting to face the fact that there are racial issues in this city. And even with the her standing up and speaking this and being sort of confirmed by the Attorney General, who did a study and found out that, yes, black and brown children are being expelled from school more than others, and their grades and the work that they get and the remedial that they get are not up to par. Even with that backing, what she has said on the website and what she has said in public, she was fought on that. But there are some racial issues going on in this city. And, you know, and I don't know if you're ready to segue into Donald Ivey. In his case, you know, I looked at that situation, and I'm speaking from my perspective, that if these policemen did not have on uniform and they did not have badges, it would have been a simple case of three thugs accosting a young man minding his business and killing him. But because they had on uniform and they had a badge, they blame his death on physical problems, that he had a bad heart. But they did not make the main issue that, number one, he was stopped for no reason. They said because his hands were pulled up in his jacket. Well, it was one of the coldest nights, in the year. And so they said that was suspicious. But then when you searched him and found out that he had nothing on him, you should have let him go. But you ended up, a young man with mental issues, probably was scared out of his wits, tried to run, you chased him down, and you tased him, they say, about seven times. And from the time you stopped him to the time he dies, it's 13 minutes that this young man lays on the ground dead. And you say there's no fault of the police. As well, what do you expect anyone in a reasonable mind to say, whether you're white, black, Arab or anything? What will a reasonable person say? You know, so his heart probably wouldn't have stopped if they hadn't stopped it. with the multiple tasing that they did. So we say, was that racial? Well, I think it was racial profiling. He was out on the street in his own neighborhood, and there will be people who will be angry with me, but I'm speaking it from my opinion.
Yeah.
To me, it sounds like there were three bored cops that said, "Oh, look at this guy. Let's go and harass him. Let's go and stop him. Let's go. You know, we have nothing else to do. So you stop this young man when you could have just followed him in your car, see where he was going, if you thought something. You didn't have to do what you did." And so they were at the mayor's state of the city, and they protested. You have African Americans saying that wasn't a proper place for the protest. And that's African American saying they were against them protesting. And then you have, Caucasians for it, and you have Caucasian against it. And so what are you going to do when you even listen to a mayor that says, this is not our city? What? This is not the city that Dante Ivey was murdered on the street by three white policemen. This is not the city where our children are being expelled more than others, that our children are at the bottom of the totem pole in grades and math and, you know, what? How can you say this is not our city? So, and that just generates more animosity because it's like, mayor, you're not getting the point. And so, we need to do things. We need to come together and really be honest about the real issues and sit down and talk about it from City Hall on down.
Hello.
Let me. Who is this?
Hi, my name is Al. I'm from Carolina. I just wanted to ask a question. When you were talking about Edwin, the way black and brown children were treated,
the Attorney General.
Did they do anything about it?
Well, what they did was sent two people from the Attorney General office to our city, to Albany, to oversee, to see that things will be better. There are two people here from his office to follow it. And that's why we fought so hard to keep our superintendent here, the one that we had who knows the mess, who's been here, who's been trying to help it, who's been calling a spade, and for those who don't understand what that is, she calls it like she sees it. We wanted her to stay because we have three schools in receivership, including Hackett, and so and they only gave us a year for Hackett, and then you're going to fire a superintendent or force her retirement and then get someone else in here new, someone who's been here all along with all of this mess, and had not done anything. So, yeah, they have people here seeing that we do the right thing. Now, exactly what these people's responsibilities are from the Attorney General office, I'm not sure. I would have to look, get into that a little more.
See, because I feel that right here today, these are really the challenges, of the majority of people who are present and current on what's going on. They've been doing it for 15, 20 years, so they're weary and tired. And that's another reason why sometimes their outward statements or some of their actions are the way they are. So more people really need to get involved with what's going on. I mean, it doesn't even matter if it's not education or whatever the case may be.
Whatever the case, right.
Right. This is a democracy, so therefore it's for the people, by the people. And just like what you were saying, they decided to get rid of somebody who should have stayed. It should. How does it stay in the hands of, the few like that when everybody, there was more people who wanted her to stay than go?
Yes. Yes, including two on the board, two active people, Dr. Brandon and Ms. Smith. They wanted They wanted her to stay. They knew the inside working of the board, but they could not tell it because it's private business. But they knew that they had they could use their democratic right to stand up for her publicly, and that was part of the basic problem that the few said to the majority. Later for you. We don't care what you said. We're going to do what we're going to do. And that's why there still come people quietly looking into that the board be taken over because everyone, not everyone, but a great majority of people think that they were so irresponsible in what they did for our children and to the city and to Dr. B, to those who fought so valiantly for her. And they still did what they wanted to do, and we think it's personal and not really professional.
Right.
You know,
and
that
you
wasn't
clarity.
A professional thing that caused it.
So what's your name again, and where are you from?
My name is Al, Eldred, but everybody calls me Al. And
okay.
I'm currently in South Carolina in Florence.
Okay.
I have quite...
Have you spent time in Albany?
Yeah, no, I have quite a few friends and family. Albany, New York, is that correct?
Yes.
Yeah, I have quite a few friends and family up there, and that's another reason why I was thinking. Actually, I was thinking about moving up there at one time. But my thing with, I tend to listen to a lot of shows and listen to the dialogue and see what I feel like some of the things that probably could fix them. Because she clearly said that the people on the board said that's private business. How can anything be private business when taxpayers' money maintains and supports their position? See what I'm saying?
That was one of our issues. Exactly. That's what we told them. How can you say you have professional or... What phrase did he use?
Professional or something.
But this education runs through the vein of every society.
Yeah.
Education affects crime. Education affects jobs. Education affects who runs for us. I mean, if you have an uneducated group of people, then your city is not going to be very good. People run away from districts and schools that do not perform. So you get good people running out of the city, away from Albany City schools, because they're not performing. They want, and then if jobs are not there and it's menial, people do not want to be in a city where high crime is because people are not working and they're stealing and robbing. So the Board of Ed seem to just be blind to the core of why Dr. B should have stayed and not change in the middle of, as I put it in one of my talks, I said, it's like pulling out a main surgeon in the middle of heart surgery when, and replacing it with someone else. You're pulling out Dr. B in the middle of a critical time in this city, in the board, not only just the Board of Ed, but, the morale of the city, the whole thing, the economics of the city, parents and caring for their children.
The lifeblood, right.
So then they did something huge that affected this city, in a very negative way, and they don't seem to get the point. But as you said, we have to go on from here, and so what do we do? Going back to the mayor, for the mayor to say, you're not talking about our city. Well, what city are we talking about when all of these things are happening right here in Albany? Not the suburbs, but in Albany. How can you say that Donald Ivey, who was a law-abiding citizen, who went to Albany School, who graduated from college in spite of his mental illness, who was slain in the street by three white cops, and you say this is not, so... If leadership is not sensitive to what's going on in the city, you don't have much hope. The board leadership wasn't sensitive to what was going on in the city. The mayor didn't sound very sensitive. even some of her other statements when she said these communities are not over policed, they're under policed. Really? You know, and so there's some things, there's a disconnect, and when you have a disconnect, we're talking about not being able to meet the challenges because we can't communicate. We're talking about not understanding what the real deal is and not being able to solve them if you don't understand what the real deal is. So we really need to not have these mock talks and these mock meetings where people are being appeased. Okay, we met, and so we're trying to listen to you, but then the community don't stay on the leaders so that they are accountable for making things happen that we talked about. You know, or are we going to keep going in a vicious circle? Okay, something bad happened, we protest, we meet, everybody goes back to their table, to their home, to their school, to their job, until something else tragic happens. We need to keep a full court press on. We need to keep after the people who are supposed to work with us to make changes. We need to hold them accountable, and we need not to sleep at this time. We need to keep this.
Valerie, one of the things that upset me about Monday night was the fact that the mayor was up there and she was giving her speech, and there were people whose voices were trying to drown her out. And they were, you know, screaming and, you know, I mean, the Donna Libby case is, in all honesty, justifiable. But there were people who didn't know the effort that I had put in to try to get people to come on my show and to create a dialogue, to create a panel in which these issues can be talked about in a very peaceful manner. And they were screaming, hollering, and I'm thinking to myself, these people, they don't even know what they're screaming about. And that totally frustrated me.
Yeah, it was sad. It was very heavy to my spirit because the sad part about change is you have to scream. The squeaky wheel gets the attention. And sometimes until you go out of your, I'm not saying get violent, but until you yell, until you make noise, until you say, I'm not going to quietly go away, until you say, no, I'm tired of this. You know, sometimes you have to do that, Cynthia. Sometimes, you know, look at our history. If change didn't really come, people really didn't listen to the underdog, to the underprivileged, to the hurting, to the poor, until they made noise. Even in, when women's suffrages, even when these women got together in Massachusetts and said, you're not taking our money, 100 women. Every year they celebrate these women, and they said, you know, these were women that spoke different languages. They didn't understand each other, but they had one thing in common. You're taking our salary and you're messing with our families. And they got together and they, with that, other folks got with them and they changed the salary back there over 100 years ago. Until you make noise, people won't listen, you know. And so, yeah, some people say it was the wrong time, but when is the right time? When will they listen and be in tune with what's going on? You have to be in tune with what's going on. And then as a leader, you have to bring people together and say, you know what, I hear you. I don't really understand everything, but can we meet on a serious mind-to-mind, upfront, honest, and peaceful sit-down? Can we do this? I hear
It really goes to information. The information needs to be shared and disseminated so that it's in everybody's hand. And that's what will change things, because the pen is always mightier than the sword. And that's why I said earlier that the people who've been in these issues for 15 years, meaning trying to watch the gatekeepers or whatever the case may be, the powers that be, that brings on that kind of energy because of all the wrongs and the atrocities that that person has seen and tried to combat. They're doing it alone. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And it really shouldn't be that way because that one person is trying to benefit everybody. So,
well, I agree with that. But you have so many people in the same race. We have so many African Americans that disagree with each other. We have, you know, just like when Martin Luther King was doing his thing, there were a lot of clergy against him. There were a lot of African Americans telling him, "You are rocking the boat. You need not do this. You know, we don't want to support you in this." You know, his real fame came after he died, and they celebrated his speeches. But a lot of people weren't happy about what he was doing when he was alive. And so you always have that dichotomy where I'm for it, I don't see it, your point, I'm a happy African-American, they don't bother me, and you're over there saying, well, I'm not happy because they are bothering me, I don't have enough, and I, you know, it's almost the have and the have not. But the older ones who are tired need to be teaching the younger ones and helping them do now what they used to do.
That's exactly where the separation partly is taking place. But another thing that I wanted to say in reference to what you're saying, that's a good analogy with, you know, black people as far as what Martin Luther King wanted to do and how some people said yay and some people said nay. Part of the reason why is because of some of the things that happened, like with Oklahoma and things like that, you know, and how after Martin Luther King, you know, made his transition, what happened to some of the black businesses and whatnot, see, that's another thing that partly caused the financial exchange. So a mom and a pop store in some of them same, you know, neighborhoods where there were more black people than white people or black people's businesses were there, more than white people's business, people stopped going to those stores and started going to the white people's stores because of the fact that of the signs of privilege and to say, I can shop here because now I have the right no matter how you feel about it. So
well,
it still was something that basically touched the emotions. And that's why I said in reference to the information, because prime example, I live in a school district. This is a scenario. This isn't factual, right?
Okay.
I live in a school district. I'm 65 years old. I don't even have grandchildren staying with me. But I'm still paying a school tax. I shouldn't have to do that. But I do that because I see the value in education. So therefore, I should have the right to say how I feel about, you know, how, you know, American education is not in the top 10 anymore. It's like 75 or 80. I mean, all of these things, and that's why I said right information needs to be shared. Regardless if a person wants to get involved or not, regardless if a person feels that their child is going to get whatever education that the government or whatever says, I mean, they have that right, and their repercussions of it is going to be because, you know, how the child suffers or progresses when they become an adult. You see what I'm saying? Because the more tools you're giving a child, the better off, you know, the more productive they're going to be able to be as an adult to take care of themselves, their families, and to contribute to society. Right? So as long as everybody has the same information, as long as when there's these board elections, when there's, I mean, I don't care what takes place, the mayor race or whatever, if a politician isn't saying education is important, even though I believe it's not in the mayor's hands, the chancellors of schools and the municipality that runs the city is supposed to be different. Am I correct?
Right, it is different, yeah.
See, so that's what I'm saying. Even something like that, people need understanding of it. So just like a small pamphlet given out, like the same pamphlet once, I mean, I know it's an expense, but these are the things that's wrong. I mean, there's too many people watching TV and getting all the information from CNN. If you go back, I don't know how old you ladies are, but if you look at the way things were done in the 70s, everything was basically done mouth to ear.
Well, you know, we are really, there are some of us in this city that are really trying to get information out there. part of the problem is engagement. It's like, how do you engage people? How do you help someone who is in and this is not to be insulting to anyone, but you know, they say that ignorant is bliss. Ignorance
yes.
is bliss. Is that
right.
You don't know, so you're not concerned. You don't know, so you don't worry about anything. You don't know, so you're in your false sense of being okay. So when we try to get the information out, how do you get people interested in that information? And we need you. We need the poor. We need the rich. We need the black. We need the white. We need the Puerto Rican. The you know Latinos. We need everybody together. We need the politicians. We need a group of like-minded people to come together and keep information going, but engage those who sort of drag along, you know. And so the people that we really need to get on board are usually not on board. We're usually at meetings preaching to the choir. The same people who come. So we need to have a way that we can engage those who don't come to the table, engage those who may not have gotten the meeting or the flyer information, engage those who really feel like none of this affects me. Because there are people that think it doesn't affect them, and it really does. And
of course it does.
It is a campaign of engagement to get people out of not knowing, into knowing, into awareness, into action. That, yes, your vote does count. Yes, you may not like who's running, but use your vote. You know, write in somebody's name. Go to the polls. Do something rather than sit back and complain and fight those who are doing something. You know? So it we got a ways to go. And no, we don't want to make it racial, but the fact is racism is smack dab in the middle of it all.
It is. That's the basically sometimes that's the foundation.
It is. And even the Dr. V called it the elephant in the room. I mean, it's as big as day, but people are in denial.
Can I ask you a question?
Mm-hmm.
See, just like that, that's all it really takes. That establishes and creates dialogue. So you stand on a corner, wherever the case may be, and you just say it to somebody. Either they're going to stop and respond to you, or they're going to keep going.
Right.
So if you get a piece of paper and you just put, keep it real simple, because you know there's so much information, and people are so. I lost my track.
The span. People don't want to read a lot. You got to get
their attention span.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, the microwave.
So if you put those four questions on a piece of paper, and the first question is, are you concerned with the educational well-being of your child and their future? And then you put another question, whatever you feel they need to be, the next three questions on the bottom. Here, we're having a meeting such and such and such and such. If you can't make it to the meeting, please call this number. And whoever answers the phone on the other side, you ask the person that called, district, or where do you live, and is there a place there that we could possibly have a meeting so somebody from this meeting can see, because sometimes it is about convenience. Prime example, one of my cousins used to be an educator, right?
Mm-hmm.
A child would be disruptive in the class. And he tried to deal with that child in the classroom. Then he had to go talk to the administrator because it persisted. They said suspend the child. They sent the child home for 3 days, sent the child home with a note. The child came back in 3 days without the parent. The teacher sent the child home and said, don't come back without your parent. The child stayed home for a week and a half. He sent a letter to the house. No, the parent called the school and said, I'm sending my child back, blah, blah, blah. That means that the parent knew what was going on. So then the child came back to the school, and then he sent the child back with a note and said, if you don't come to school Monday with the child, we're sending the authorities to your house. The parent came to the school with an attitude because she had to miss a day at school, I mean a day at work, to deal with this issue.
Mm-hmm. Well,
you see,
you know, I'm an educator, and I'm retired, but I was the type of educator who felt like this was my philosophy. I'm your parent today. Your parent is at work or your parent is not here. I'm your teacher. I'm your parent. I'm your psychologist. I'm whatever you need today, and we are here to learn. So I didn't send kids home. I very seldom sent them to the office unless they were a detriment to other students in the class. But
that's
not the
happening.
Way things today. That's not the way things today. They're like, I mean, I used to hear teachers say, I would, one teacher said, and this was in a teacher's lunchroom, one teacher said, these kids act like animals. And you know what another teacher said? I wouldn't even insult the animals.
Mm.
So, yes. So this type of talk going on in a cafeteria among teachers and who just want, and let me not take away from teachers. There are some excellent teachers out there. There are some excellent teachers
right.
that will bleed for their students. So,
exactly.
But I'm just saying that in every group, you have the good and the bad apples in every
yes.
group. But
every
we
group.
Hope that we have more good apples
yes.
than the bad ones. And so we just need
is,
the change to come. We just, you know, we can't give up, but like you were saying, we need dialogue, and we do need to get the people together and stop running from the racism issue and
right.
stop, because I'm going to tell you, and I'm going to be very blunt right now, the KKK, the Ku Klux Klan, is in every facet of American industry.
Of course.
They're in the bank, they're in the school, they're in the police force, you know, they're in they own businesses, they're in entertainment, they're everywhere. They're just not wearing those hoods anymore. So, but that's a harsh thing to say, and people will hang me to the cross for saying something like that. But they're a black racist, they're racist in every culture. But if we keep denying that, and if we keep coming to the table talking about all these irrelevant things or not the main issue things, we're never
right.
going to see a change. We're never going to
exactly.
see a change. We have to face that right on. And so what do? We accentuate positive, and then we have to expose the negative.
That's right.
And work on a difference. Yes.
Valerie, we have 2 minutes left. So will you come back on Focus on Albany and continue the dialogue? This has been very interesting.
Yes, I would love to do it, yep. That will be
next Sunday?
I'm not quite sure when it will be, but I can call you and I can let you know exactly when it's going to be. And
okay.
You can be a guest.
You could get Daryl's information. It's Daryl, right?
Okay.
Yes.
Eldridge.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah, because this was good dialogue, and it's going to take dialogue followed with action to make a change.
Right.
Positive action.
Okay. So, Valerie, let's work on creating that change.
Yes, that's what we're going to do, and that's what I used to do. So, and there are many others like me, you know, so we can make it happen.
Okay, you've been listening to Focus on Albany, and if you like this show, if you have a comment about this show, go on Twitter, hashtag Focus on Albany, and share your thoughts, and this conversation will be continued. Thank you, guys. Have a great afternoon.
And you, too. Thank you for having me. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye.